The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Joined by Shaka Hislop here in the studio. Later on in the programme, Gab Marcotti and Jurgen Klinsmann will be here to reflect on Inter Milan's impressive 2-0 victory over Juventus. We start, though, in the Premier League. The big game, of course, at Anfield did not live up to expectations. It finished Liverpool 0, Manchester United 0. And this is a worrying trend for Liverpool at the moment. Their third consecutive game in which they failed to score. Well, let's welcome into the programme, shall we, Stevie Nicol and Frank Leboeuf. Stevie, let's start with you, shall we? What's going on with Liverpool? Why can't they score?
The front three are having an absolute shocker. It's pretty plain and simple. You know, the team behind them is getting them plenty of the ball and they are not producing. And it's as obvious as that. So, unfortunately for Liverpool, they've got three players right now who all at the same time, well, they couldn't hit a barn door from 2 yards, basically. Completely out of form. Salah was playing like a schoolboy. At least Mane was getting himself about. But Firmino, you know, the guy with the clear head, the guy that brings everybody in, the guy that plays the right passes at the right time, can do absolutely none of that. I mean, he probably Liverpool's best chance today when Salah somehow got him the ball 12 yards out, and it was just such a weak shot. And then he got played through again on the left, couldn't make his mind up, got closed down. And of course, for me, the worst of all pretty much was when he had a wild slash at a shot from the edge of the box, two defenders closing him down. Had he rolled it left to Robertson, who was completely on his own, he may have scored. So when you've got a front three that you're relying on to get your goals and they're in the type of form they're in, then you get nothing. And that's what they got, nothing.
Well, I suppose they got a point, didn't they? Manchester United picking up a point.
Oh, goals.
Yeah, as well, Frank. Who's the happier side with the draw here? United?
Yes, United. Because I think it's what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was looking for. I mean, the way tactically he played, the capacity of his player and the individualities that he has against a team with the champion of England, you know, it's a good point to go to Anfield and draw. They did what they had to do. Of course, they were far from being spectacular, but they did what they had to do again. Liverpool is very strange, you know, because when you think that the centre half, you know, has been completely removed, and he's the player that normally you see in the middle of the park who plays centre half, you would have thought that they would be there, that you would have the problem. But the problem, as Stevie said, comes from the three at front. But at the same time, you know, when you see Klopp, the way that he wants his team play, you need to be physically at 100%. And we can see that the players are far from being in a very good shape.
Stevie, did you enjoy today's game? Not being a no, Liverpool I'm... fan, as a football fan.
I would say no. Obviously, as a Liverpool fan, it was frustrating. But I also thought, you know, some of the giveaways on both sides, I thought were a bit schoolboyish, particularly Salah. I mean, Mohamed Salah today was having a fight with the ball. I mean, he never once was able to control it. It was always 6 inches too far away. It was never in control on his left foot. And as I said, he was just fighting with it all day. So Man United didn't need defenders because he couldn't control it.
Do we need a crowd, Shaka? This isn't the first time we've sat here talking about bad Premier League matches this season, matches that haven't lived up to expectations close. Or you could just say, look, Dan, down the years, Liverpool Manchester United hasn't delivered.
Yeah, I think that's the key, that oftentimes
when you have two clubs, as big football clubs as you had today, with as much on the line, with both of them pushing for titles, that's sometimes what you get. And I'm not sure that a crowd actually changed that. But just to go back to something Frank said earlier, to your question about who's the happier, I think Liverpool are the happier, given the fact that I thought they were the worst team between the two. Even though Liverpool had more of the possession, Alisson made the better saves, and that's not even counting the Bruno Fernandes free kick that whistled just wide. If you're Manchester United, as happy as you are to go to Anfield and take a point, especially in the context of how strong Liverpool have been at home for a number of years, but when you play that well, when you have those kinds of chances, and when defensively you cope with Liverpool's front three, whether you want to interpret it as their front three just being awful, you feel disappointed that you don't take all 3 points and put them further behind you. That being said, I think you know what you're going to get from Manchester United, especially when you see Liverpool's starting 11, which on the face of it I thought was very attacking, with Wijnaldum, Thiago and Shaqiri in the midfield. And then you have Fabinho and Henderson as your two centre-halves, two players who aren't naturally centre-halves, and you know of Manchester United's counter-attacking threat. To Liverpool's credit, I don't think they were as negative or changed the way they played in the manner that you saw City do earlier this season, and still were able to keep a clean sheet despite those adjustments. So there's a lot to take for both clubs, but I think Manchester United would be the ones feeling that they missed an opportunity today.
Go on, Stevie.
Dan. No, I've sat here previously and said, you know what, you can enjoy a 0-0. And the reason I didn't enjoy this as a football fan is because there was no tension in the game. It was a Liverpool-Manchester United game at Anfield with no tension in it. It was almost like just watching a pre-game game where it was, OK, one team's going to go forward and lose it, and then the other team's going to go try and go forward. There was no excitement or any tension or any of the things that you enjoy watching in a football game, which is incredible. Liverpool, Man United, no tension. Wow.
Stevie, can Liverpool get back on track? How easy is it to re-establish that form, which saw them so brilliant last season?
Well, it's clearly not easy because this is what, the fourth Premier League game in a row.
Yeah.
So they're running out of time. You know, can they get it back together? Yes, they can. But it's a matter of time now. If it takes another four games, then certainly the way Manchester City are playing and the way United just keep getting points, then it might be too late. So, as you said, it's going to have to happen quickly.
Let's just remind you then how things look after today's matches. Manchester United remain top of the table. Manchester City, meanwhile, moving up to second after a 4-0 victory over Crystal Palace. They're just relentless at the moment, aren't they, Frank? Manchester City, they seem to be steamrolling all opponents, not only in attack, but defensively as well. Another clean sheet. Goodness me, look at that. I don't expect a goals of 0.05. Whether you like that stat or not, it does tell you that Crystal Palace had what? Oh, no shots on target. That's why the expected goals were so low. But City have found their extra gear now, haven't they, Frank?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they're really, for me, the favourite of the Premier League. You know, they're back into the race. They showed it to the world. I mean, look at that pass. Look at that goal. And Stones, you know, making getting the double. I mean, two goals, defensively perfect. I mean, everywhere, in every line, all the players are spot on and do the job very well. And comparing to the game we saw just before between Liverpool and Manchester United, I don't see anybody thinking that Manchester City is going to be back and is going to overtake everybody and is going to win the title. They prove it again today.
John Stones, very much the story, Stevie. And quite an extraordinary one as well, because when Diaz came in, we thought obviously it was going to be a Diaz and Laporte partnership at the back. Pep Guardiola speaking after the game saying, well, what happened? What's changed with him? He said, I gave him minutes and he didn't let me down, and it's put Manchester City now second in the table.
Yeah, well, this is a completely different John Stones to the one that we've seen over the last two or three seasons. You know, John Stones, 6 months ago, it seemed like his career was over at Manchester City. And as you said, Pep Guardiola, whatever he's done to him, I mean, you just, it's like a new signing. I mean, the guy hadn't scored a Premier League goal for 6 years and got two today. I mean, that's how confident this guy is. So, incredible. But I'll tell you what, Man City have still got another gear. Listen, two goals from a defender and one from a midfielder. Their front three are still not quite at it yet. So, Man City are absolutely climbing the mountain very quickly, and they've still got, as I said, another gear to go into.
Frank, when City were having that rough start to the season, before they put in this incredible run of 12 wins, 3 draws, no losses, you would come on here and go, I hate watching Manchester City. They are terrible. They bore me. What has changed?
Well, simply the fact that they play vertically instead of playing from a side to another side. I mean, playing handball. I hate that. I don't know the way the tiki-taka of Guardiola was playing his team. And they change. They're more efficient, they're faster, they're more interesting, they know how to defend because they didn't know last season. I mean, they're perfect everywhere. You know, I put them favorite of the Premier League at the beginning of the season, but on top of it, they please me the way they play. And there's nothing much to say that bravo, Mr. Guardiola. You know, you're doing the job.
Kevin De Bruyne, just with the assist today, Stevie, but just when he is on fire and when he is in that top gear, this team is unstoppable, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, the player has ability and his vision as much as anyone else because he sees things that most people don't. And then when you have the ability to deliver what you want, the way he did today with the outside of his right boot, then unless, if you're the opposition, unless you shackle him and put him in chains, then you're not going to be able to stop him. Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, earlier today, we saw Spurs with a, what was the score again? 3-1. Well, it was a while ago. 3-1 victory against Sheffield United. I suppose, Stevie, when Spurs went 1-0 up, Tottenham fans would have gone, oh, here we go again. They're just going to sit back. But they didn't this time. And obviously, it's only Sheffield United. Now, is that a change of mentality from Spurs or just a rubbish opposition?
No, I think it's to do with the opposition. Sheffield United always try and go forward. And unfortunately for them, they don't control the ball well enough or keep the ball well enough. Certainly this season they don't. And so that meant that Tottenham were getting on the front foot an awful lot. And certainly further up the park as well. So I don't think this is probably a good game to gauge it by. I would, however, like to know who thought and don't believe meant that lob at the end.
I knew you'd pick a hole in that. So you're saying it was lucky, Stephen, that he didn't mean it?
He didn't mean it. He never, from when the ball... Oh. I can't remember who lifted the ball over, but as he's running backwards watching the ball coming, he never once looked at the goalkeeper.
Frank,
if you try to play it back across...
He doesn't need to, Stevie. He saw everything. Hey, it was completely intended.
He's not
come on.
He's not that good.
He's absolutely fantastic. Yeah. He's fantastic.
This is not Aguero we're talking about.
We are talking about a player who improved so much.
There's nothing you can say.
He's been the best player. He's been the best Spurs player from the last months. I mean, he improved so much. And
so
he showed, because I saw him playing. You don't look the... you never look the League One. I saw him playing in Lyon before he signed for Spurs. It's what he was doing. But you don't see because you only watch the Premier League. You never watch the League One. Which is a fantastic league, by the way.
I actually did watch Liga. Hey, I did watch Liga. But there's
liar.
A reason why I don't now.
You're a liar.
Because it's rubbish.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, we go to Shaka for the casting vote.
I am giving Ndombele.
Oh, you know he's going to give it.
Of course I am. I'm giving Ndombele the benefit of the doubt. I think it was intended.
Yep.
I think it was intended. And as for the Spurs performance, I think the most pleasing thing, and albeit against Sheffield United, is that how often do you see, or maybe even expect, a Jose Mourinho team, after conceding a goal, and you have a one-goal lead to just set up shop and think, let's just shut this down completely. But they go and respond quickly. Dombele with his intended finish. Again, with the two-goal lead. If I'm a Spurs fan, that's the thing that pleases me most.
Right, let's take a look then at how the bookies have things set regarding who is going to win the Premier League. Manchester United, who sit top, are 7-1. Manchester City, 4-7. That means you've got to put on £7 to win four back. So you can see how much they consider them favourites. Leicester, meanwhile, 28-1 despite being second. Liverpool now drifted to 7-2. Spurs, 20-1. Are Manchester City that big of favourites in your eyes, Stevie?
Yes, I think so. Listen, I've just said that the front three are not quite clicking. The front three are not quite at it. But they won 4-0 today. They never lost a goal. They haven't lost goals. They've got the best defensive record in the league. And the front three are not at it. And they're just by far the best team right now for me. No question. So absolutely their favourites.
Who are their biggest challengers, Frank?
Oh, it's going to be still Liverpool for me. I mean, they're my two contenders. We're very surprised by Manchester United, and they do very well. But because the two others weren't at the top, Liverpool is still looking for something physically, I think, to get back to who they were. But City is like two levels better than any other team right now, and they have one game in hand. Mm-hmm. So I think they're going to win it. But they're going to be. I think February 6th. We're going to see Liverpool against Manchester City.
Yep.
We'll have maybe a little bit of an answer.
That'll be 0-0. Great. Look forward to that. Shaq, you were looking at their fixtures. They got a nice run, really, in January. And then it all snowballed. February's fantastic from our point of view. From Manchester City, quite the test. Of course, Champions League football coming back. And then clashes against the likes of Spurs, Arsenal, Manchester United. And of course, Liverpool.
I think the next five or six are very winnable for Manchester City. Of course, they have that cup game with Manchester United to come. We see how they fare with both of those. And I think what you've seen with City over the course of the season, I don't think they started the season that well. And I think there's almost been a little bit of a change. I think that this City team are more comfortable defending in their own half on the edge of their own box than any time we've seen them, certainly under Pep Guardiola. And they've gotten better. 8 weeks ago, I thought Kevin De Bruyne cut a very frustrated figure, arguing with officials.
How did that look, Shaq?
It wasn't good if you're a City fan. But now you see him enjoying his football and everything is falling into place for City at exactly the right time. As you mentioned, in the next five or six weeks, They may be top of the table, have a little bit of a distance before the fixtures get a little bit tougher for them. So right now, it's looking really good for City.
The action, of course, continues tomorrow. It's Arsenal against Newcastle. It's going to be another 0-0. Arsenal 9-4 on to win. Newcastle 7-1. The draw 7-2.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
The big game in Italy today saw Inter Milan beat Juve by 2-0, but the scoreline doesn't really tell the whole story. Inter were brilliant, Juventus very poor. Well, let's welcome to the show, shall we? Gab Marcotti and Jürgen Klinsmann. Jürgen, what a statement this was from Inter Milan.
It was really a statement from Inter Milan. I think it was a well-deserved 2-0 win. Outstanding individual performances, I think, Barella had an outstanding game. Bastoni as a left center back. Also Hakimi. But for me personally, I have to say, we talked about Arturo Vidal before the game. It was his game. It was his game. Not only because he scored the first goal, because he really maintained throughout the entire course of the match, his discipline, he was focused, he was all over the place, he helped his team. All over was an enormous positive team performance by Inter, and that goes to the credit of Antonio Conte. I mean, the way he set them up for the game and throughout the entire game was outstanding, and that should give Inter a lot of confidence. It should give them a big boost. They have the momentum now against AC Milan. They're on the top of the league. And so it made a lot of Interistas really, really happy around the world.
Yeah, a lot to like from Inter today, Gab.
No question about it. Jurgen, I think, highlighted the individuals. I'd highlight too. It had one guy who often gets overlooked, and that is the Braz, Marcelo Brozovic, in the middle of the park. Juventus, I think, lost this game in midfield. And Brozovic was a big part of it. The way he queued up those transitions, the way he calmed Inter down when they did have possession. This was really, really big for him.
After seeing this sort of performance from Inter, Jurgen, would you say they're favourites to win the title?
For me, they're the favourites. I mean, obviously, we discussed that. They are not in the Champions League anymore, in European Cup competition, so that frees up a lot of space in their schedule. So it keeps them always energetic in the Serie A. And if you look at the roster, if you look just at the fact who they brought on then as substitutes, they have the deepest roster in Serie A at the moment. They have now the momentum. Beating Juventus today is a vital, vital moment in their season. So I think they are deserving their favourites to win the Scudetto.
Gao, if you're Juventus, how much can you point to the fact that there was no Cuadrado, no Alessandro, no De Ligt, no Dybala? How much of an excuse can you use that you have some big players missing from this tie as to the performance?
I think it certainly plays a part in it. And, you know, and I think if you're Juventus, you also point to the fact that, you know, if at the very end, and this is ultimately part of Juventus's DNA, if you like, you know, they get destroyed, that it could be 4-5, 6-0 down. And yet, when it comes down to the very end, if Handanovic doesn't make that super save off of Federico Chiesa, all of a sudden it's 2-1. And, you know, it's Sir Alex Ferguson might say squeaky bum time at the end for Inter. So that's still there. That's something to build on. Those are big
absences. Yeah, what do you mean there's something to build on? You know, they were 2-0 down, biggest... luckily. That's not, if you're going to put a positive on this for Juventus, you really are clutching at straws, aren't you? That Handanovic's save late on. Well, if it wasn't for that, it could have been 2-1. Now, Lautaro Martinez could have a hat-trick in this match.
Like I said, they could have been a lot further down, but they weren't. And this is part of Juve's history, the 9 titles that they won. They didn't win those titles by playing well all the time. They often found ways at the end to win, even when they were thoroughly outplayed, much of the frustration of other teams in Italy. A little bit of that is still there because they have the outstanding individuals. The absentees, I think, impact you. But the single biggest problem for Juve remains in that area of the pitch where they didn't have any major absentees, and that's in the middle of the park. Whatever combination of Bentancur, Archer, McKenny, Ramsey, Rabiot, whatever you put out there, isn't going to bail you out, isn't going to impose themselves on the opposition. You know, Juve have played well this season when they've made it a series of one-on-one battles, which they've won, allowing them to supply Morata and Cristiano Ronaldo. That's the only way they've won. They need to, until they fix that midfield, this Juve team, the way Pirlo wants them to play, isn't going to work properly. They may get results because they have great players, but that's about it. And I think that is the most disconcerting part. And then maybe that'll be an alarm bell.
What's the big problem, Jurgen, that it's going to be very difficult for Pirlo to fix between now and the end of the season if they're going to retain their title?
It's going to be very, very difficult because now it's already 7 points they're behind. But I totally agree with Gap. They have no kind of piece in the center park where, you know, he kind of really, can switch the game around in a split second with a decisive pass, with a one-on-one situation scoring a goal. They don't. I mean, Dybala is not a number 10 really. He's also kind of a coming from the wing, going inside. So it's more a forward than a midfielder. So there's no number 10 really to take matters in his own hands and create something surprisingly. So that will be a little bit of a problem. I don't think they find something on the market in January now. Still, there's not much opportunity out there in the global market. So it's gonna be a tough couple of months ahead of Andrea Pirlo.
They were terrible today, Shelley.
Yeah, awful. Like,
and there was nothing then. There was no fight in the second half that you were expecting. That late chance from Chiesa, their best opportunity. That aside, there was nothing. And Gab said it. You know, there is no spark in that midfield. Nothing that's going to get this team going.
Yeah, a lot to figure out if you're Juventus in this one. And to Gab's point, Juventus have won 9 titles, not by being great week in, week out, but by knowing how to win. Even when they don't play well. And that maybe has been the big criticism around Juventus all season. They've been inconsistent, and that's putting it as nicely as I possibly can, yet somehow they've kept themselves in the discussion at or very near to the top of the table. But you look at what happened today, and 2-0 doesn't begin to tell the story about how dominant Inter Milan were and how lacking Juventus were. And for me, there's no creativity in Juventus's midfield. You're asking a lot of Chiesa on the right-hand side. And if you look at the left, which was always my concern, it was Fabrotto getting past Aaron Ramsey, whether you could fix that with Weston McKennie. But then you saw how that left them exposed in the build-up to the second goal. That big gap, once Fabrotto gets forward, between him and the centre-back, and somebody who can pass the ball, would expose that. And that, for me, it speaks to Juventus's weaknesses and why, as much as I've been saying that I think come the end of the season they'll be there, now I'm starting to go against that.
Gab, how big a deal is it that the defending champions and the favourites to win the title this season seem to be falling so far behind?
I mean, well, when we look at this, we need to remind ourselves that they do have a game in hand and they're still going in the Champions League. Now,
well, they're not going to win the Champions League, Gab. So you can, that doesn't matter, does it? That's that done.
I don't know. You go tell Cristiano Ronaldo he's not going to win the Champions League.
Well, Cristiano Ronaldo needs to turn up, which he didn't do today.
He had a poor game today. He also didn't get the service. But this is the thing. You know, you can't rely on Cristiano Ronaldo putting on his cape and doing the Superman act. That's not going to happen every single game. It's a big deal. Like I said, you don't like it when I bring up the transition word, but from the club's perspective...
Okay, Gab, I understand. You've got perspective on this. Yeah, you can look at the big picture. You have that ability. But Juventus' fans surely aren't as patient and tolerant as you are with the situation that they're seeing unfold. And today was kind of a microcosm, wasn't it, of what is going wrong at this club at the moment?
I mean, I think it's a fair point. These games are being played without fans, right? So in terms of how the fans feel, we have to rely on what's on message boards and whatever is out there. So far, having spent a little bit of time on those crazed Juve message boards, I can tell you that most fans seem to understand the situation. The fact that there's no money, the pandemic, all this stuff, you're not going to fix this. I mean, to Jurgen's point in midfield, in terms of getting somebody with a bit of passing, a bit of spark, I wouldn't be surprised if they try to get somebody, not him necessarily, but like a Lucas Torreira, somebody like that, some cheap and cheerful guy who at least can keep the ball and can pass it and keep it ticking over and isn't going to slow everything down. That is about the best that they can do right now. I think people understand the situation. They have won 9 titles in a row. At some point, if this continues, obviously people are going to point fingers at Pirlo and say enough of him. But this was all part of the downside plan when they hired Pirlo. It's not a good situation. And I think if they feel that the top four is threatened, I think that is when they might act. We're not quite there yet.
From an Inter perspective, not meaning to kind of be a Debbie Downer on it all, Jurgen, but you look at their Champions League group, Borussia Mönchengladbach, Real Madrid and Shakhtar, you only win one of those games. You look at that performance today, and you think, how on earth did that happen?
I think there might be a group that is slowly growing together. I think they went through a lot of pain with losing in the group stage of the Champions League. I mean, it's not an only discussion about is the coach right or wrong. It's also about do they have chemistry? Do they stick together? So they went through a lot of negative moments there in the early part of the season because of that. And now they realized, okay, if there's something really out there to win, it has to be the Scudetto. It has to be the championship. So the step to semi today was a real... testimonial of a team that was hungry for every one against one battle. They were fighting all over the place. They were there for each other. I mean, if even, you know, they look at the partnership, Lautaro and Lukaku, all, today they really were there for each other. You know, it was a really big statement. So I think there's something growing there. It gives them a lot of confidence. Obviously, with this result, it's the main rival in their history. And they hopefully continue that path.
For Juventus going forward, Jürgen, I dismissed it obviously with Gab, the possibility of going on and being successful in Europe. Am I being too quick to jump to conclusions from what we've seen so far this season? It's just difficult for me to see a path in which Juve improve and improve significantly to compete with the likes of Bayern Munich and Manchester City come at the end of the spring.
Well, the biggest challenge always for the big teams like a Juve, like a Man City, like a Bayern Munich is how can you handle a transition period? How big is that transition? You know, how many players do you look at? You know, so when you go through the roster or you go through your starting 11, you know, at Bayern Munich, you see year in, year out, you see one or two positions being possibly changed. So the younger one that is kind of in a second position of a specific role, he waits for his moment and then comes the moment and they make the switch. Now, if you look at the Juventus roster at the moment, you see there are some issues in the back line, you know, because of age. Even if Chiellini, I think, played an outstanding game, he played a battle there with Lukaku, they got to give him a compliment. But, you know, his time is kind of running out. Bonucci as well. So when you start then this type of transition, you know, you got to be lucky as a coach in this time than Andrea Pirlo, when it's not too many players that kind of require that type of a switch, this type of a change. You know, Cristiano Ronaldo is there certainly for another couple of years. You can count on him. But I think Gab was totally right. They have some issues in the midfield. They need more creativity. They need more more spark to it. And so they will definitely look into the market probably in the summertime. But I hope that they give the time to Andrea Pirlo. He has clear ideas. He has a good vision of things. Obviously, he will gain experience. You know, with every game as a coach, he will gain experience. And then you can see definitely Juventus climbing up also in the table of the league. But it's not going to happen overnight.
Well, Italian football continues this week. Just a reminder, it's the Italian Super Cup on Wednesday. Juventus taking on Napoli, that game live on ESPN2. Coverage starting at 2:50. Before that, AC Milan away against Cagliari with a chance to re-establish a three-point lead at the top of the table, followed by Roma against Spezia on Tuesday in the Coppa Italia. Wednesday sees Udinese take on Atalanta, who can only manage a 0-0 draw today. That's at 9 a.m. on ESPN+. And on Thursday, more Coppa Italia action for you. Lazio against Parma.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Bayern Munich extending their lead at the top of the Bundesliga to 4 points after a hard-fought 2-1 victory over Freiburg. Oh, Jürgen Klinsmann's still with us. Jürgen, a much-needed victory for Bayern considering their week.
Yeah, very much needed victory. But done in style, I would say, even if Freiburg played actually a very good game, they held their ground and obviously equalized, and they had the chance to when they hit the crossbar, Pedersen. But what I really liked on the Bayern performance was the fact that the leader stepped it up. Robert Lewandowski, as usual, and especially Thomas Müller, who's playing another outstanding season. And they gave them the 3 points, gave them now a situation where they're 4 points clear for the next team. All the other teams pretty much chasing Bayern Munich lost points this weekend. So it ended in a good way for Bayern Munich this week.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday, didn't we, Jürgen? The fact that chasing pack, none of them could register a victory. For Leipzig, held away against Wolfsburg, maybe you could forgive them for that. For someone like Borussia Dortmund to only manage a draw against Mainz, thoroughly disappointing.
Yeah, that's especially disappointing for Dortmund because obviously you play the team on the bottom of the league, which actually played a good game, but you expect their, 3 points. You know, they didn't get the 3 points. They missed a penalty through Marco Reus. That was disappointing in that moment. You should have left it maybe off to Erling Haaland to take that penalty. But also the fact that Leipzig then left 2 points at Wolfsburg, who's playing a good season right now, is just damaging because if you want to keep it up with Bayern Munich, you got to be there, especially when they maybe have a difficult time. So they had a difficult time with losing in the German Cup in the middle of the week, and the weekend before they lost against Borussia Mönchengladbach. Those are the moments where when you are the chasing team, you got to take advantage of. But all the teams behind Bayern didn't take advantage of that situation, so it means that they are now 4 points clear, and we still hope for a more dramatic title race, but it pretty much looks like that Bayern is too comfortable already.
On that point, Jürgen, the general consensus 2020 belonged to Bayern Munich. They were, I think, without a doubt, the best team in the world. Do they still hold that mantle going into this new year, considering what we've seen from them? Is this a blip, or is this a sign of something deeper wrong with them?
No, it's just a couple of weeks. They're going through a little bit of a tough time. If you go through their roster, if you go through their team, there's no need to kind of add new pieces to it. You know, it's a fairly young roster with a lot of good, top-class, world-class players in individual positions. So they're very well placed for the run at the Champions League again this summer. Obviously, when you come through a year like 2020, you win everything you can win. You know, Hansi Flick came in as an interim coach, and then he won 5 trophies. Then it can't get any better. So it's difficult now to keep the hype going. So you got to go through a period of time, like a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of negative results. But Bayern Munich is known for a very hungry culture. It is known that when things go wrong, they correct it right away. Their roster looks very, very consistent, very strong. So I expect them to be in the top four again this year in 2021.
Final question, Jürgen, before I let you go. Did M. Dombele mean that goal?
Yes, he meant it.
Yeah.
Huge compliment to him and the French Championship.
That's it. Take that, Stevie. Jürgen Klopp, thank you very much.
Jürgen
as
Klopp?
Always.
Hmm? You call
Jürgen
him
Klopp.
Klopp.
Jürgen Klinsmann. There you go. What's Klopp ever done? World Cup has he got?
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much, as always, for your tweets. Got Shaka Hislop here in the studio today. How's that shirt fitting, Shaka, right?
Very nicely.
Yeah, very nicely, yeah. Stevie Nicol with us as well, as is Frank LeBeur. Frank just come from a round of golf. Stevie, were you thrilled with that 0-0? I mean, you wanted to watch that instead of a 9-9.
Well, unfortunately, this particular 0-0 left me with some egg on my face, shall we say. That was rotten.
Stevie, what about the people that are tweeting and saying it was a tactical masterclass, it was a fascinating encounter between two tactical sides?
A tactical masterclass? We called the way this game would go 3 days before the game kicked off. So, I don't know about a tactical masterclass.
Oh, dear.
Both sides, when it mattered, couldn't pick a pass or keep the ball properly.
Tactical masterclass, Shaq?
No. Yeah, well, listen, you can have a tactical masterclass in a 0-0, no question.
How about a great defensive display by Manchester United's backline?
Really? I thought it was more Liverpool being a bit rubbish in front of goal.
Well, it's a combination, isn't it? If your back line doesn't allow the opposition to get a shot at your goalkeeper.
Yeah, but they did.
Anywhere inside
but they
the
did have
box.
Shots.
You've done a good job.
They did have shots. Firmino had an off day. So you can't say it's a defensive masterclass from Manchester United.
You're trying to be. Hold on a second. How many clear chances did Liverpool have in the game?
You had Firmino's chance was really clear cut, wasn't it? You would say
the one right, where some, one.
Yeah.
Salah as well.
And by the way. The only reason that they actually had the chance was nothing to do with lovely silky passing and movement.
Right.
It was Salah getting 16 ricochets off defenders who had no control of the ball, and it ends up at the feet of Firmino. So,
Frank,
you've got to give Man United credit for the
defense. Frank, what do you think? Stevie says this was a defensive masterclass from Manchester United.
Well, they did well, but mostly because Liverpool was very bad. I mean, they had seven shots. In the first half, they have seven shots, but all of them not on target. And I didn't recognize. You know what? I didn't recognize Liverpool. In the first minute, Robertson has the ball on the left side, and he tries a cross and put the ball behind the net. And I say, whoa, it starts very well, very badly for Liverpool. And you have another chance where Firmino sees Robertson or doesn't see him, but doesn't give him the ball. I say, what's wrong with Liverpool? That's not Liverpool. That's not what I normally see. So Manchester United did well because they kept the clean sheet, but it's mostly because Liverpool didn't do the job.
How long will the ESPN panel wait for Liverpool to get back to their best before admitting they are just not the same team anymore, Shaka?
From the time Van Dijk went down, you knew Liverpool wasn't going to be the same team that they were last season. But
defensively, we knew. But then attack-wise, they've been poor as well.
That wasn't the question.
I think it is.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
So how long are we going to wait before saying they're not the same team that they were? We've been saying that for weeks.
But they're really not the same team.
They're a lot worse than we thought they'd be. Admittedly.
Dan. Go
Dan,
on, Frank.
December 19, this match...
Crystal Palace
7-0?
Yes.
Yeah, 7-0. And since then, and Boxing Day, they dropped dramatically. So yeah. I think it's physically that they're not very, very well. But you have to take in consideration the fact that they have so many players between injuries and COVID who are not in a good shape. That's the thing. So Liverpool is not in a good shape.
Oh, I don't Manchester know. That's just an excuse, isn't it, Frank?
Well, but that's an excuse that you had your top front three
out today. They're not injured. They're fully fit, and they just weren't good enough.
No, of course they weren't good enough, and I never say that they were good, and I don't try to find any excuses. I try to judge what I see, and what I see is not the team that I used to see.
No.
And I think the question is when we're going to see them coming back to their best. But before going back to their best, they have to get the players back, and they have to get their fitness back to be as good and maybe to be judged.
Stevie, was your team ever on a goal drought similar to Liverpool's current one? If so, how long did it last and how were you able to start hitting the back of the net again?
I'll be honest, I don't ever remember a goal drought. You know, we certainly went...
Stop itching!
Some stretches, not winning. I'm moving this out the road. We certainly went some games without winning. But I don't remember a goal drought.
Shaka?
Individuals would have goal droughts.
Portsmouth, Reading, there must be some goal droughts there.
I've never had a goal drought like that myself.
No, you've thrown them in for fun.
Listen, but to be fair, it's... You don't expect all three to be having as bad a time as they do. You could cope with one or two.
It must be miserable in training, though, isn't
absolutely
it? When no one's scoring
be.
And it's just...
Absolutely, it must be. But to Klopp's credit, the one thing he's done in terms of handling players who I don't think have performed well at times is he's just kind of stuck with them. And he's never tried to throw anybody under the bus. And I think that's what he'll do now.
What's Stevie like?
I don't know. He's probably itching. Probably itching again.
I just remembered something. Paul Walsh, when he was at Liverpool, he went about 12 to 14 games without a goal.
Wow.
And we were still winning. But by about the 10th or 11th game in training, we kind of all took turns every day going up and saying, "Hey, Walshy, what is it you do to celebrate a goal again?" <His face. laughs> And Walshy, by the way, always had an answer for everyone. But that's on this, he just would do that.
Shaka, did any of you ever have a team other than your local rivals that you simply despised during your playing days? Whether this be because of their arrogance, dirty play, etc. Just someone you always played with more fire against. Internationally, did you have more fire against the Americans because of their arrogance?
In all honesty, you kind of... Playing in CONCACAF, you know that the US and Mexico are going to run away with it, and then it's everything else that counts. And that's kind of the mindset. Anything you get out of those two is icing on the cake. So, I don't think you're that upset with anybody else. In terms of club, probably the best I could... of course, there was the Newcastle Sunderland derbies that I played a couple in for West Ham. West Ham hate Chelsea.
Yes.
Chelsea couldn't care less about West Ham.
Right, one of those.
Yeah. They barely knew who we were. But that was the game that meant the most to the fans, and you knew it as a player. So probably Chelsea, as I say, but, you know.
Did you ever play Millwall? West Ham Millwall was a big one.
I never played West Ham Millwall. I played at Millwall for both Reading and Portsmouth.
How was that?
You know, well, for Reading was easy enough. That was the old den.
Right.
I just started in English football, so no issue. I went back with Portsmouth, obviously, as an ex-West Ham player. But we smashed them. We won 5-0 at the New Den, and we actually got a standing ovation leaving the field. And
from Millwall fans?
From Millwall fans.
No, Shaggy, that's a made-up story.
I'm telling you. And I wasn't expecting it.
No?
It really wasn't.
Well, that's because it's made up. Shaka, after Besiktas' huge win over Galatasaray today, will that get them back into your top 10 power rankings? Well, went top of the Turkish league, didn't they, with that win?
You just have to wait and see now.
Mm?
We don't see.
Oh, by the way, Shaka.
Yeah?
I have a question about Galatasaray. Muslera got injured very dramatically in June. He's never going to come back because the goalkeeper for Galatasaray doesn't seem to be at the top. Comparing to Muslera. Do you know if Muslera is still
Shaka,
the goalkeeper of Galatasaray now?
Yeah.
Yeah, you are the goalkeeper. Come on.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
sparks are coming for you.
Frank's got his fireworks out.
Do the sparks for you.
Shaka?
Yeah.
Muslera? What's its time frame on coming back?
Oh, come on.
I thought there was something special. 6 to 8 weeks.
Thomas, as if you've just
got to... there was something special between goalkeepers, you know? Well, you don't care. You don't care about the goalkeepers getting injured.
6 to 8 weeks, Frank.
I'm going...
Stevie, when it rains or snows, do players change their kits at half-time? I imagine they do now, but back in your day, I can't imagine you did.
No, yes, he's sat there. He's just sat there. Freezing. Try to get a cup of tea to get you warmed up. Oh, it was awful. Well, We only have four sets of strips for the whole season.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that was it?
That was it.
Who was it that you said that they gave away their strip on their first day at Liverpool? And Ronnie Moran shouted at them.
It was Glenn Hussein. We played Fiorentina in a testimonial pre-season. And after the game, Glenn ran over to the Fiorentina fans because Liverpool bought them from Fiorentina. So part of the deal was we played them. So he ran over to Fiorentina fans, took his strip off and threw it in. So he's run off the field, got back in the dressing room, and Ronnie Moran went, "Who do you think you are?" Glenn's like, what? He went, we've only got four strips to do as the season, and you've only got three left. Glenn's like, what?
Oh, my God.
Frank, did you just have to wear the same strip, sleep in the same strip?
No. We had the possibility to change halftime, you know, the shirt. And we had, like, I don't know, 10 shirts per year, you know.
Right.
So we wanted to swap at the end of the game. It was possible. Yeah.
What about you, Shank?
we had a few, but going to the World Cup, right, we get sponsored by Adidas to play the World Cup.
Yep.
We get there, they tell us, you have three strips, that's all. Of course, in the group stage, you're playing three games.
Yes.
So the player's like, hold on, I want to swap shirts with, you know, an opponent, you know, for the game, and then I won't have any shirts. And it got into this big heated debate in the team hotel and around, you know, so we are arguing with administrators about, and they're like, well, that's all Adidas gave us. They only gave us three strips. So we're like, so what if we get through to the next round?
Yeah.
Well, then they would have given us more. Honestly, and it was really heated. In the end, we couldn't get any more. It worked out for me because I only played the first two games, of course. So I kept my shirt from the third. Only for the start of the next domestic season in Trinidad and Tobago, Jack Warner sponsored a team called Joe Public.
Right.
Joe Public played in Trinidad and Tobago national team shirts. In the league campaign.
He took all the shirts.
He took all the shirts.
Wow, for his own team.
Players couldn't get the players in the World Cup couldn't get a spirit. If you played three games, you had to make a choice as to whether you keep a Trinidad and Tobago shirt or you swap it with all three opponents. And then only to find out that all the extra shirts were commandeered and used as a club shirt in Trinidad.
What about gloves at halftime if it's wet? Do you change your gloves?
Not really.
No?
No, the gloves, even back, I think they're better now, but even back then, they cope. You have only wet weather gloves.
Hey. Only if you'd let half a dozen in the first half, you'd change them.
Would you ever do that? That's a good point. If you had a rubbish first half, would you burn your gloves at halftime?
Yeah, I would.
New ones.
Mm-hmm.
For the defenders, Stevie, Frank, is it harder to defend a right-footed left winger or a left-footed left winger and vice versa on the other side? Good question, Stevie.
Well, it makes no difference.
No. No. Me, I like it. I like with the... Yeah, go on, Stevie, go on.
No, it makes no difference because if you don't close them down properly, regardless, they're going to do you. Because if you don't close them down, and he can whip it in one way. If you don't close him down properly, he can whip it in the other way as well. So you're not actually going to affect it, whether it's a left foot or a right foot.
Frank?
For me, it doesn't change, you know, my mind about a left-footed or right-footed. It depends if a left-footed right plays on the right side, you know, or a right-footed plays on the left side, I will push him to go on the side, you know, of his wrong foot to make sure that he is only going to cross the ball and not have an opportunity to shoot. Which, like Robin, for example, you know, if you take Robin, who played for Bayern Munich and the Netherlands, if you open the door for him to shoot, he will kill you. So you have to close the door. You have to force him to go on the right side for him to use, in order for him to use his right foot to cross and maybe miss the cross because he's left-footed.
A lot of left and right in all of that. Final question, Stevie. A lot of people notice this, Stevie, and they're concerned. They want you to put some batteries in the carriage clock behind you because it's been at the same time for months.
Months has been out for about a decade.
Why don't you wind it up? Put some batteries in it.
Why?
Well, because you want to clock the tell button. Why? Damn it, do I want to clock the tells the time? Stevie, there's a new photo. That one's there is new. We haven't talked about this one. Right over your right shoulder. Is that you and Eleanor? Well, it's not like any time.
Which one? That one?
Yes.
Yeah, that is actually at the dinner after the Champions League final against Rome.
Well, show it to us so we can see.
1984.
Bring it closer to the camera.
We don't see it.
Oh, I can't believe you had colour photos back in that day. Here we go.
Oh, so that was the.
Look at that. Oh, it's beautiful. Oh,
look at a young Stephen Nicholl.
Look at that. No.
You look like Paul McCartney.
Really?
Looks like Paul McCartney.
I wish I had his bank balance.
Oh, are you laughing at missing the penalty?
Yeah.
That's it.
Nothing. Hey, by the way. What does Jürgen Klinsmann know about scoring goals?
I know.
Keenan, don't believe me.
Oh, well done. That's a good end. Very good, very good.
Very good. Thank you very much, boys. That's it. That brings us to the end of Extra Time. Be sure to join us tomorrow for more ESPN FC.